Good morning, Santa Fe, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We are broadcasting from the studios of KSFR and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. And we're podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can listen to the show anytime you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. I'd like to introduce Margaret Lancaster, flutist and interdisciplinary performer, and she'll be performing in Santa Fe tonight and on Saturday afternoon, thanks to Santa Fe New Music. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
So the program, the two programs, the one tonight and the one on Saturday, are called The Colors of Music. Is that title your concept?
Actually, that came from Rosie Kennedy, one of the co-directors of Santa Fe New Music. And she and John put together brilliant programs and just come up with very unusual concepts. And this was her brainchild, I believe.
So tell us, we'll talk about the programs coming up in just a moment, but first of all, tell us how you started out as a musician and a performer.
I started out as a kid, you know, being forced to take dance lessons and piano lessons and all of that. And then, I was in the junior high school band when I came to the flute, and which was relatively late compared to most musicians. But I really loved the flute and just never looked back from there. I just played it all the time and never really thought about what I was going to do because that's what I did. Then when I moved to New York right after undergrad, I started studying acting just to enhance my performance skills. And I was also taking a lot of dance classes as well. And they just all sort of fed each other. And I use them even more than I ever imagined that I could. When I'm acting, my musical skills inform a lot of my choices and vice versa.
It's unusual for a musician to be as deeply involved as you are with other types of performance. I mean, dancing and acting, I would think usually that no matter what you're doing in school or whatever, one of them or most of them fall away except for one, but that's not the case in your life.
It's not. It does take a lot of focus and a lot of time, and I'm not saying it's easy, but I really couldn't imagine not doing them, or at least not having the influence of them in my performance.
When did you start acting? You know, as well as being a distinguished professional flute player, you are an actor that's going on tour internationally in a production of The Doll's House.
Right, that's correct. I started acting when I moved to New York, and I started taking class just to enhance my performance skills, and I found that I really, really loved it. And so I started pursuing that as well as music, independently of music. And I found that no one was taking me seriously as either a musician or an actor, because this was like the mid-90s, and you can't possibly do two things at once. Of course, now like everybody does the interdisciplinary thing, but it really wasn't being done that much. There are people who have been doing it for decades, like Meredith Monk, Laurie Anderson.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a sort of 80s
right.
performance art thing in a way.
I know. But in my little world, I was not being taken seriously. So I had to sort of give up, so to speak, acting in order to be legitimized as a musician. I never really stopped acting. I just stopped talking about it. I got rid of, some agents and managers and just started doing the things that I really love to do, which are, sort of weird indie films and experimental theater. And actually, I've had a much richer acting life since I stopped acting.
Since you stopped saying you were acting.
Right. But then, once you stopped saying that, then I started sort of looking into how I could combine music and acting and dance, and I started developing projects with composers and different collaborators. And, you know, I think I bring a sense of theatricality into sort of everything I do.
Now, do you bring your music, your flute playing, into the production of The Doll's House that you're in?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I play flute in one little dream sequence where I also, I'm doing a pas de deux with a stagehand, and it ends, I'm playing the alto flute, and it ends with him sort of dragging me off stage in a standing split while I'm playing the flute.
Good heavens.
I know, it's kind of crazy. But I have to say about the dollhouse role, I was cast as an understudy originally for this woman who was pregnant, and she was due to give birth mid-run in the opening New York run. And instead, she went into labor on opening night day.
And now, so, meanwhile, the director, which I find fascinating, had modified the production of The Dollhouse to include that character being pregnant.
Yes. He takes what Lee Brewer is brilliant. He takes whatever you have to give him, and he just throws it in.
So pregnancy on her part, the flute on your part.
Right. There's no flute in Ibsen. No.
Right.
But so she was pregnant. It was worked into the role, and she went into labor on opening night, so they called me in, and opening night was my very first time on stage with them because they had not worked me in yet.
Good heavens.
I know. So, and
that's the mark of a professional, if you can never have rehearsed a performance and go ahead and do it on opening night.
Well, I have to say that my music training really helped me out because I have a lot of entrances and exits, and it all became, you know, all about timing. And so, you know, having a sense of that really helped me out.
So let's talk about tonight's performance. It's at 7 o'clock at Charlotte Jackson Project Space, which is at 7511 Mallard Way off Airport Road for our radio listeners, and it's called Toneland Security. You're presenting 10 different pieces by 10 different composers, and many of these are pieces that you commissioned.
Yes, that's correct. Over half of them have been either written for me or are works that I have championed.
So tell us about some of these composers and the type of music it is. I mean, new music is a term. You know, it's an official term. New music means something, but probably many of our listeners don't know what that means.
Yes, well, it's a very vague term, and you know, there are dissertations written about it, you know, all the time. All of this music was written within the past 25 years, and the pieces I'm presenting have a really, really wide stylistic range, but the one common thread that holds them together is that I feel each of the composers I'm presenting possess a truly singular and innovative voice. And a lot of them have been called mavericks, and they just have a really special quality to their music, very individual voice.
It's interesting. What are the musical roots? I mean, is this a continuation of the classical music tradition? Is there pop thrown in, other world music, so-called world music, as part of it?
Right. Well, I think all of the composers come from classical backgrounds, but, you know, several of these pieces have electronic accompaniments, and a lot of them use extended techniques. And yes, there are a lot of pop influences. There's a piece by Nick Brook called Zhao Ak Zhao, which is based on West Sumatran flute playing. And Lipstick by Jakob Trevelhaus actually uses a vocal sample of an interview with Billie Holiday and also some excerpts from American talk shows. So it runs the gamut. Basically, I'll be playing electroacoustic works for flute.
And will you be playing with other musicians?
No. This is all solo flute and flute with tape. And one of the reasons I work with electronics and CDs is that it can provide different textures and different backgrounds, and so it's not like you're just listening to the same sound for, you know, an hour and 15 minutes.
That's right. It's a wonderful thing to be able to work with living composers. When someone is composing music for you or you're commissioning music that you end up playing, how do you work together? What's that process like?
Oh, it's wonderful. That's my absolute favorite thing to do in life is to collaborate with different artists. And each experience is completely unique. Every collaboration is different. Some composers want complete control and don't want to hear from you, and others are constantly asking for your input or asking you to play samples and just looking for reactions. And I enjoy them all. I really cherish my time working with the composers, and I feel really privileged that I can bring their ideas to fruition. And that's the greatest part about playing works by living composers.
To what extent is there room for improvisation on any given piece that you're playing, for example, in the program tonight?
Actually, in tonight's program, there is no room for improvisation.
Oh, interesting.
But I do play a lot of works with improvisation.
We're talking to flutist and interdisciplinary performer Margaret Lancaster. On Saturday afternoon, January 19th, you'll be at Site Santa Fe in a performance called For Philip Guston, and this is music by Morton Feldman. Tell us about this piece. Philip Guston was an abstract expressionist painter and a close friend of the composer's.
Mm-hmm. This piece is for flutes, piano, and percussion. And I don't know if you're familiar with the work of Morton Feldman, but Morton Feldman works with very slow-moving structures, and his works are very quiet, and he creates these almost crystalline harmonies, and they're mesmerizing, absolutely transfixing. And this particular work is 4 hours long.
Really?
Really.
Good heavens.
It's actually, the concert is in the afternoon. It's from 1 to 5. And you can come and listen to the whole thing, or you can come in and out if you want. You know, he did not mind that.
What's lost if you go in and out? Is there something gained by sitting quietly for the whole 4 hours?
I think so, because I mean you really are taken into a different world. And I remember I heard his second string quartet a couple of years ago, and that work is 6 hours long, and I went because I knew the performers, and you know, it's not played that often, and I just thought it would be a good thing to do, but I didn't imagine, you know, really loving it. Being engaged the whole 6 hours. So I took my little notebook to, you know, doodle on, and I have to, honestly, from the very first note, I was mesmerized. It was magical. I can't even articulate how magical this experience was. And we all sat transfixed for 6 hours. And also at that concert, they encouraged you to walk around the hall and hear it from different vantage points. And they even had carpets set out on the stage so you can go and lay down on the stage and listen to it. And that's where I spent like the last 3 hours of it. And at the end of it, I did not want them to stop. You just wanted that sound to stay in your ears.
You weren't hungry?
No. Nor did I want to hear anything else.
That's amazing.
It really is. Like you can't truly imagine it until you experience it.
It's funny because I was wondering whether with a 4-hour piece there wasn't a kind of funny parallel to these gigantic abstract expressionist paintings that nobody could actually buy and put in their houses because they were just too big. And here's a piece that's almost too long for most people to sit through.
Right, right. And yet, you know, you love the art and you love the piece. Yes, in fact, I just spoke with someone who had heard a performance of it not long ago in Canada. And he said that in that performance, they had recorded part of the middle, like a middle section of it. And so they played the beginning and then the end, and then they plugged in the middle on the recording. Mm-hmm. I think that's cheating.
Yeah. Very interesting. I have at different times in my life gone to new music concerts, and it seems to me that for a member of the public who's used to listening to either, for example, chamber music, classical music, or listening to pop music, rock concerts, that kind of thing, or club music, there's another headspace that you need to put yourself in to really sink into new music, to sink somebody like Morton Feldman. I mean, maybe that's something that you're too close to comment on, but I wonder what you think about that.
Well, you know, I think that classical music comes with, you know, a very bad connotation. There are expectations and formalities that come along with that. And I think one has to do away with it. Like, when you're listening to pop music, granted, you know, songs are usually 3 or 4 minutes long, but, you know, you have to remain just open-minded and let yourself experience what your hearing makes you feel and let it transport you to wherever it does and just enjoy that experience. And I think it's a lot more satisfying. And also, I just, you know, if you feel like, if you really love something and want to clap, I am not offended ever when that happens.
Right in the middle of the piece.
Or you know, in between movements or whatever. You know, I'm not offended. I'd rather have interaction and know that the audience is engaged and, you know, and going through something instead of just sitting there bored and wondering when it's time to get up.
We're talking to flutist and interdisciplinary performer Margaret Lancaster. Here's an excerpt from a review about one of your discs. The reviewer wrote, "In her hands, the flute veers between seductive siren song and high-velocity assault weapon. These 6 pieces were written for her by composers alert to her technical strengths and musical temperament. Her slippery twists, turns, and tangents are glossed by ingenious percussive and electroacoustic designs, remote from the formulaic accompaniment so often reserved for the instrument. All that delivered with astonishing breath control and a knowing smile." I love that review. You probably have had people comment on that a lot. But I was struck by this flute as assault weapon line. What do you think of that?
Some of the music on that disc is very aggressive, but also that could have been inspired by the cover,
right?
I don't know if you saw it or
not. Yeah, yeah. He called it a James Bond girl.
Right, because in the photography studio, they had a bunch of toys, including like little, you know, little toy you know, space guns from the 1950s. And so I just started messing around with them. And so actually there's like a little toy gun picture in addition to some flute shots on my cover.
Right, right.
So, but I, you know, probably he meant that, you know, a lot of the music is aggressive and that, you know, I play it with conviction. And so I, you know, I take it as a compliment. I like that line too.
It's great. And it also brings into the, I mean, this whole thing that we were talking about before about bringing other kinds of performance and just the presence that you learn from acting, that you bring from acting into your flute playing.
Right, 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 of course. And also, you know, you have to know, to me, like, all art is about communication, and you have to know what you want to say, what you're trying to say. So I try to bring that into every performance, whether it be music or acting or dance or whatever.
It's interesting that you say that, because you have to know what you want to say. Can that be expressed in words, or are you just talking about musical ideas that don't necessarily have a verbal corollary?
Well, see, that's the beautiful thing about music is in almost every piece I play, you know, I have a whole sort of through line that's going on, or an intention, and, you know, every piece is about something to me, but because there usually are no words, I'm not sort of hammering the audience with my intention. But what is, I think, very clear and readable is that I am saying something, and I definitely have a story to tell, and so it invites the audience to make up their own story.
Let's listen to some of your music. Let's talk about the piece Once-a-Thon.
Okay. Once-a-Thon is by Robert C. Constable Jr., and he lives in Florida, and he and a group of other composers from the Tampa area got together and formed a festival in the 90s called the Bonk Festival of New Music. And I became a recurring performer and core artist in this festival, and it was really fantastic because it was just a sort of a breeding ground for composer performer collaborations, and so like all these composers just wrote tons of music for me, and they all started promising to write pieces for me, and so Rob very early on said, "Oh, I'm going to write you a piece. And it's going to be called Once-a-Thon." Well, I heard about the title for, 4 years with not a speck of music. And so in order to encourage the production of this piece, the other composers started saying, "Well, I'm going to write Once-a-Thon, too. I have three. I have four." And so actually, two and four were written before Once-a-Thon was ever begun.
That's hilarious, because we can hear both of these now. So they're by two different composers.
Right.
But the Once-a-Thon 1 did get composed.
Yes, it did. It's a great piece.
What should we listen for?
Just it's a very funny piece. He uses vocal samples, and it's just a very sort of straightforward flute and tape piece. There's a high integration between the flute and the tape. It's very highly synchronized, and I think it's sort of self-explanatory.
Were you listening to the tape when you were playing the flute?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Well, let's go ahead and hear that.
Okay.
The more you listen, the sooner success will come.
Yeah. I enjoy driving. I am a patient person.
So Once-a-Thon 2 was written by Eric Lyon.
Eric Lyon, whose work, the New and Proved Truth, Book 3, I will be playing on tonight.
And who's Eric Lyon?
He's a composer who is now teaching at Queen's College in Belfast, Ireland. And he's a wonderful composer, has written many, many pieces for me, both electroacoustic and just chamber music. And he has a very, very quirky sense of humor, and I think it's very audible in Once-a-Thon 2.
The Once-a-Thon 2 is actually a studio remix.
Yes. I recorded it on my CD, Future Flute, and then I performed it a couple times with Eric live, with him doing live processing, and it became, and he rewrote sections of it, and so it became a much different piece. And so that's what you have now, the studio remix.
Well, let's take a listen.
Thank you.
Let's listen to another piece called Robin Redbreast. This is by Eve Baglarian.
The music is by Eve Baglarian, and the text is by Stanley Kunitz.
And so how did this piece come together, and what was your involvement in it?
I've collaborated many, many times with Eve, and she had a commission to write a piece for the Guggenheim Works and Process series, and it was to be for voice and flute and electronics, and she was collaborating with the poet Stanley Kunitz, and she found this poem, which is just, it's heartbreaking. It's really, really beautiful. And she asked for my help, because we've done many projects together. And so she just, we were working on something else, and she asked for suggestions and sort of feedback on ideas. And so I helped her create what turned out to be the piccolo part. She used piccolo instead of flute. And it's quite a remarkable work, I think.
So let's listen to that now.
It was the dingiest bird you ever saw. All the color washed from him as if he had been standing in the rain, friendless, stiff, and cold. Since Eden went wrong in the house marked for sale, where nobody made a sound, in the room where I lived, with an empty page, I had heard the squawking of the jays under the wild persimmons tormenting him. So I scooped him up after they knocked him down, in league with that ounce of heart pounding in my palm, that dumb beak gaping. Poor thing. Poor foolish life. Without a sense enough to stop running in desperate circles, needing my lucky help to toss him back into his element. But when I held him high, fear clutched my hand. For through the hole in his head cut whistle clean through the old dried wound between his eyes. had tunneled out his wit. I caught the cold flash of the blue on a peaceable sky.
The next piece is Sorrow Like Pleasure Creates Its Own Atmosphere, and that's by Jean Pritzker.
Yes.
Also written for you?
Yes, written for me. He is a New York composer, and the title is derived from a Balzac novel, Cousin Bette, I believe.
So let's listen to that now.
Thank you.
last piece we have is Don't Let Me Disappoint You by Corey Dargle.
Yes. Corey's a young singer-songwriter from New York who is also an actor, movement artist, and he's just really, really a brilliant young voice. I think he was named one of the, you know, top 100 New Yorkers, or he got some sort of, like, hot young person award from Time Out like a couple of years ago. And he's a dear friend, and he is writing a song cycle for me and him entitled Born and Raised. And it's based on our experiences of being born and raised in the South. And so far, I think there were, I don't know, 6 or 7 pieces in the cycle, and it's ongoing. It's not over yet. And this is the first one he wrote, Don't Let Me Disappoint You. I like it a lot.
Let's listen to that now. With Santa Fe New Music.
I've had the great pleasure of working with John and Rosie Kennedy for over 10 years. The first time was in 1996 when he hired me to play for him in the Lincoln Center Festival. And the collaboration has just grown from then. I work with him at the Spoleto Festival and have had the great pleasure of playing in Santa Fe. This will be my third time And also I'm coming back in April for their concert then. But he's just, they're both a joy. And their enthusiasm and knowledge and ability to constantly create innovative programs continues to amaze me. And it's just, it's my great privilege to be here and working with them.
Well, we certainly look forward to seeing you tonight.
Thank you.
And Saturday night.
Yeah, come on out.
Thank you for spending all this time with me on the phone.
Sure, it's been fun.
We've been talking to flutist and interdisciplinary performer Margaret Lancaster. And she will be performing tonight, January 17th, at 7 o'clock at Charlotte Jackson Project Space, 7511 Mallard Way off Airport Road. And tickets are available at the door or at Nicholas Potter Booksellers at 211 East Palace Avenue. And then on Saturday, January 19th, from 1 to 5 in the afternoon, she'll be at Site Santa Fe on Paseo de Peralta. And tickets, once again, are available at the door or at Nicholas Potter Booksellers. You can also find out more information about all of these events and much more at the Santa Fe New Music website, and that's sfnm.org. The phone number at Santa Fe New Music is area code 505-474-6601. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. We're also podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, jazz.